Hey friends, I want to introduce a new sponsor to you, HMA VPN. It's a VPN you can count on. As you know, I do a lot of travel and I tend to connect to a lot of untrusted wireless networks, and I probably shouldn't, but I can use HMA as the world's largest VPN service. It offers the most server locations worldwide, covers 190 countries, there's always a server nearby, doesn't log your IP address, and allows me to connect 5 devices simultaneously. Works on basically all platforms, Android, iOS, Mac, Linux, Windows, routers, wherever. It's actually been completely redesigned recently to make it even simpler and more fun to use. And there's even a smart kill switch that'll turn the VPN automatically on when you launch sensitive apps. Here's your call to action, my friends. Try HMA VPN risk-free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. This deal is for Hansel Minutes listeners. That's hmavpn.com/offer-Hansel Minutes. That's hmavpn.com/offer-Hansel Minutes. Hey friends, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes of a sort. This is a little different. This is the first or second show of 2020, and I thought for the first time in 700 episodes, I would actually have myself on the show. Now, I realize that's a super egotistical thing to do, considering that the show is named after me, but I recently did a little internal conversation with a group of folks that are called the Live Coders. It's part of Jeffrey Fritz's team on Twitch. You can go to twitch.tv/team/Live Coders. It's a team of over 100 folks that Twitch live. They code and develop live in the open, and they were kind enough to invite me into their Discord, their audio chat channel. It's like IRC, but for people that talk. And they asked me questions about building community and how I manage my life and how I do my blogging and my podcast. And the result was about 50 minutes of audio and about 5 minutes of content. And someone had the idea that maybe we should make this a podcast. So be warned, this may suck. But at the same time, it might be useful, and I hope you check it out. It is a longer show. It's about 50 minutes long, so bear with us. But I hope that you enjoy this unusual episode of Hansel Minutes.
So you've had a lot of experience growing and managing communities, and a lot of the folks that are here, when we were in that other voice channel before we got started, folks were kind of impressed with how many folks you have following you on Twitter. I mean, that's a huge, huge number. And
why people are impressed with that.
Right.
It's about longevity. It's about being mediocre for decades. if people, the only difference between me and other people is that I haven't stopped.
Okay.
Like I've talked about this. I gave a talk last week? Estonia? One of the Balkans. I can't remember. And I was talking about community and everyone's like, oh, you know, I was doing, it's awful now that you're old because it's like, oh, I was doing reading your blog when I was in high school. And I'm like, oh God. But the blog has been going for 17 years. The podcast has been going for 14 years. What people don't do when they set up these communities, these things, is make them sustainable because they create an unreasonable expectation, right? You look at every YouTuber, every Twitcher has burned out. And, but I blog twice a week consistently for 20 years. And I podcast every Thursday for the last 14 years. And the reason that that works is that I'm not doing it 5 days a week. You know what I mean? So I appreciate all the work that you all are doing, but I've told you this personally,
yeah,
Jeff,
yeah,
privately. Please don't burn out. You know, set up systems by which your community can be self-sustaining and that it does not require you to show up every single day or you will burn out. So the only difference between me and everybody else is that I had never stopped. And
sure,
that really speaks to consistency. Now, I joke about mediocrity. Some of my things are mediocre. Some of them are not. But I am patting myself on the back. Finally, I'm like, you know, old enough and good enough at what I'm doing to be able to like have a little bit less imposter syndrome and a little bit more confidence in what I'm doing.
Mm.
And that is that I have had a consistent quality, B+ quality for so many years. And that's the thing, right? Like it'll be interesting to see what Twitch looks like in 5 years and in 10 years and how many of you continue to do it and not give up.
So
does that make sense?
It totally does. And actually, you're kind of feeding right into Robert Tables' question here. I'm going to unmute him so that he can
ask that question.
Is
that little Bobby Tables?
That is. This is little Bobby Tables. Let me unmute him so we can ask his question for you.
I had a question. When you built a community, as you've done over the years, you eventually hit kind of growing pains of any company. So imagine you have a small group like a Dungeons and Dragons group, or you have a small group in your company that is hyper-focused on a thing like usability or accessibility or something, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And you, when they get very, very large, you hit the growing pains of any company. Imagine you have 100 people in your kind of community all over the world with everyone having their different ideas and things like that. These are the same pain points that companies hit with scalability, right? So how do you view kind of delegating responsibilities for aspects of kind of like a group or a community, or managing expectations when community mentorship is not even part of your role, meaning you're kind of doing this thing like not part of your job?
Okay, so there's a couple of things to parse there. First, there's the what's your job and what's not your job. That doesn't really matter. I mean, it's just that people usually break it up into what they are paid for and how much time they have to spend on something. But those things are really come down to just organizational willpower. I mean, I'm not paid to blog. I'm not paid to podcast. I work for the Microsoft, but I don't do either of those things for work. But I do find time for those things that are important, right? And so that's thing number one. Back to the community aspect of things, you talked about how you create these communities and then they get to be a certain size. One of the things that I think that people don't do, whether it's a community of two, like a relationship, or a community of 100 or more, is express what the actual goals are. So I'll use a marriage as an example, a long-term relationship, and then I'll scale it up to a community. When my wife and I got married, you know, everyone gets married or gets into their partnership, and then they write their vows. And it's surprising how few people actually write their mission statement. Like, I've seen more sophisticated business plans from people who are opening a food cart than I have people getting married. My wife and I wrote our business plan, our goal, our, like, what is the point of this community we are building, this culture of two that we have made, and we are doing it with an intentionality to it. That makes sense. And when you put together a community, whether it be 50 live coders or a blog or whatever, you set a tone. It's a congregation, to use a religious reference. And if my podcast is a community, my blog is a community, my Twitter account is a community, and you have to make sure that 80 to 90% of the people in that community, or if it's a community of two, 100% of the people, are 100% behind the goals, right? And when it gets into the 50-50, as we see, like if we look at like government right now all over the world, it seems to be oscillating between 51% and 49%, where it's like, wait a second, we're not even agreeing on like the Ten Commandments. Like, you know, thou shalt not kill. Well, it kind of depends, you know. Like those kinds of conversations indicate that we can't even agree on the earth is flat or not, right? So when you put together the live coders, what you all need to do as a team is decide what's the tone, what is the goal, what is the way we're going to interact with people, so that if a troll shows up or a meanie shows up or whatever, they are overwhelmed with the positivity of the group, and that there's not 5%, 10%, 30% of the people that are like, well, you know, they're just well actualing. You know, it's good to ask hard questions or whatever. You have to hit them hard with, nope, this is a positive space, block and move on, right? That's how you scale. It starts with two people agreeing on what the hell we're doing, and then scaling up and making sure that the slider bar between the one side of the, you know, one side of your perspective of how you want your community to behave and act, you know, is it a community that are a bunch of edgelords that are like pushing the edge of what is appropriate, or are they a bunch of people who are like excessively kind? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I live, I'm not religious, but I happen to live coincidentally in a community that is 95% Mormon. And while I'm not a Mormon, darn, there's some nice people. Like you got to give them credit for agreeing on niceness as a thing. They are excessively killing with kindness. I'm like literally 100 feet right now from a stake center. It's like a Mormon church. And they're just like so nice. And it's like, well, you know, we may not agree on all the Mormon stuff, but gosh darn it, we can sure agree on kindness. Yeah. So that agreement, the intentionality, what's called deliberate practice. Go and Google for deliberate practice is so fundamental to community. But no one ever actually says it. And then that's why communities sometimes succeed or they don't. That's why like Reddit is such a challenge right now, is that no one actually founded Reddit with the agreement that we would all be nice. And now, after the fact, they're trying to do what's called retconning. They're trying to retcon nice. You can't retcon nice. So while you are a small team, figure out what you all believe in. You know, like this I believe. Where's the Ten Commandments or the Bill of Rights of this little group here. Does that make sense?
It does.
Bobby tables?
That completely answers my question, and I'm very impressed with your attitude. And I'm taken aback. I have to think for a minute. This is too much
my PayPal
and
is,
honesty from someone I don't even know.
Really?
Thank you very much.
You don't know me? You should get to know me.
Just Google Scott. It's the fifth entry on Google.
Yeah, it's right after Scott toilet paper tissue.
There you go.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I just wanted to answer the right question, and it sounds like I did okay. You know, a really great website, a really great community that you're probably all familiar with is called Code Newbies.
Yes.
CodeNewbie.org. You know, step one, don't be a dick. That was what they did, and they are excessive. And the idea is that when 99% of the people are that nice, then you end up with the community self-policing so that someone does not necessarily have to show up in order to be nice. Yeah, so Ron Gitbarek runs that community. Thank you. And I apologize for calling you Little Bobby Tables, but let me tell you, I'm going to have to do that. That's required.
So we had the second question. That came through. Rock Zombie too as a question.
Yeah, I'm interested in starting a blog. I've been streaming kind of inconsistently, which I realize now is probably a big factor to, you know, the lack of community growth. But yeah, I was kind of just interested in how you started your blog. Like how much of your growth was attributed to your blog? Mm-hmm. And did you already have a community, like a Twitter following maybe, or did you already have some kind of audience before you started it? And yeah, I just kind of want to know how crucial of a piece your blog is to your audience and your communities that you built.
Okay, so there's a couple of things worth calling out there. First, you use the word growth. I want to dig into that. Then you said Twitter, and then you said following, and then the blog. So first, consistency is king, period, full stop. Yeah, I tell this to my kids, and I don't mean to refer to you all as kids, but I'm old, so I'm going to do that. I tell my kids, step one, show up. Absolutely, absolutely show up. Consistency is the thing. How often have you visited someone else's blog and the very last blog post is a rededication of themselves to blogging? I haven't been blogging lately, but I'm back. And it's like 4 years ago, right? It's like the last thing that they ever wrote was like, I'm back and I'm ready to blog. That's because people set up these failure systems. They set up failure systems for themselves. And if you can blog once a month, or once a week, or what? Once is something. It's got to be something that you can't ever stop. It's got to be far enough away that you miss it when it doesn't happen. It can't be too far away that coming back is a chore, right? It's got to be well spaced out, and everyone's spacing is different. For some people, blogging every day is like a diary. For some people, it's like, oh God, it's Friday, I got to blog. Yeah.
And here's Scott, it was a discussion with you around this type of topic that really got me focused on streaming consistently.
Yep. You got to be consistent, but you also need to make sure that you have to check with yourself. You have to have an internal check-in where you say, does this feed my spirit? Like, is this the thing that makes me happy? If you feel you need a blog to grow, then that's the wrong attitude. And the thing is, there's always going to be somewhere you can throw your time, and there's always going to be somewhere you can throw your keystrokes. Blogs, podcasts, wikis, Stack Overflow, internal Q&A systems, like all these places are that you can do, you can put your keystrokes. But as Rambling Geek just said, do it because you enjoy it, not because you feel that it's a requirement. Now, that said, you still need to work out, right? Exercise is required. Otherwise, you'll, you know, well, it's not really required. I mean, you'll die earlier if you don't, but you do it because it's the right thing to do. Exercising every day, twice a day, might burn you out, right? But it all comes down to the serotonin balance. But here, also very good things from Rimu here. Enjoyment, money, or habit. If you go out and Google for Hanselman productivity tips, one of the things that I talk about in my complete list of productivity tips is if something is not set up to, let me see if I can find the, here we go. Christopher Hawkins said this quote. I'm going to paste this quote right here. Now, I'm going to change that quote because the part where he says make money is BS. And I'm going to just put underscore. If it's not helping me to blank, if it's not helping me to improve my life in some way, it is mental clutter and it's out. So take all the things that you do in your life, everything, sort them, signal versus noise, value versus no value, where value is up to you. The reason that I changed the part where he said make money and changed it into underscores was to make the observation that what is your goal? Is your goal fix your career? Is your goal spend more time with your family? Is your goal to get a six pack? Whatever, every single thing in your life needs to be measured against that goal. You see? So if a goal is, you know, have a great career and make more money, but what's the real goal under that goal? Does that make sense? For me, I started the blog not for you. I've been blogging all these years and I did it for myself. I did it so I can Google myself later. I gave a talk yesterday at the Portland Area .NET Users Group, and I probably Googled for myself by just adding my last name plus the thing I was searching for 7 times, maybe 9. Which means that every single time something interesting happened, rather than forgetting about it, rather than emailing someone, I wrote a blog post about it. Do that once a week for a year. That's 50 blog posts. Do that once a week for 10 years. That's 500 blog posts. So it's not hard, like consistency. It's just like compounded interest, right? I've got thousands of blog posts, but you got to do it once a week. But once a month, that won't make a lot of blogs. You can't help but help your career if you blogged once a week. And all of the excuses about reasons not to blog, well, I don't have anything to say. There's so many. Everyone's already been said. Ignore the haters. Just, it's a diary. Do it online. Do it consistently. It will make life better.
Thank you. That was like super, super informative. And I guess just a small follow-up question then is that since my issue with blogging has, well, I haven't even started it, but I guess reason why is I have had a hard time trying to find like a good workflow. So maybe if you could share a bit of insight into your workflow as to what your blogging process looks like.
So first thing, I have a blog post. I'm going to go and bring it up. It's called Your Words Are Wasted. Words are wasted.
Well, while you're grabbing that, I'm also going to unmute Michael Jolly because that feeds kind of into his question, which I have next here. So Rock Zombie, I'm going to put you on mute and I'm going to unmute Michael Jolly so he can continue a little bit of that conversation.
So my workflow is I use a tool called Windows Live Writer that is just basically electric paper. You know, I mean, it's just like Markdown. It's just a nice little HTML editor that I can hit post on. The point is you don't want to have anything in the blogging process be tedious. You just want to be able to open a thing up and start slapping the keyboard. So like, I'll give you an example of like a free blog post that I did for myself. Here you go. Thursday last week, a young lady on Twitter texted me and said, hey, I'm finishing my PhD and I'm super nervous about like becoming an adult. Do you have any advice? And I just started slapping the keyboard and I gave her a list of advice and she tweeted it. She actually tweeted screenshots of our DM and it ended up going kind of like low key viral. And then I'm like, wow, I just slapped the keyboard like 2000 keystrokes there. I'm going to turn that into a blog post. So then I copy pasted the words into a blog post. You see what I'm saying? Like, don't waste your keystrokes.
Thanks to Datadog for sponsoring this episode of Hansel Minutes. In their latest report on container trends, Datadog analyzed 1.5 billion containers and found that in orchestrated environments, container lifespans averaged about 1 day. To easily monitor this dynamic infrastructure, consider using Datadog's container-specific features. The container map provides a bird's-eye view of your container fleet, and the live container view searches, groups, and filters your containers with any criteria, like tags, pods, or workspaces. Try Datadog in your own environment with a free 14-day trial, and you'll receive a complimentary t-shirt. Visit datadoghq.com/Hanselminutes-podcast to get started. That's datadoghq.com/Hanselminutes-podcast to get started, or check out the link in the show notes.
So, and Michael Jolly's follow-up question, go ahead, you can unmute and go after that.
Yeah, thanks, Scott, for hanging out with us today. All the content you're putting together, whether it be, you know, blog posts, the podcasts you do, tweets, all that kind of stuff, it's a lot of content to put out there, right? So I'm kind of curious, how do you manage all that? Like, if you're putting out a blog post every, you know, say 2 weeks, you've got certain things you want to tweet about. Okay, twice a week, podcasts coming out regularly. Do you like cue that up? Do you say, you know, up this weekend, I'm going to write up 4 or 5 blog posts and just have them queued for the month? Or do you attack that?
That's a good question.
Every couple days?
That's a good question. So I use the To-Do app, the Microsoft To-Do app. It used to be called Wunderlist. And the trick with anything like this is remember that it's kind of like a buffer. And buffers that are like supposed to be like a bucket or like a backlog, for lack of a better word, right? If a buffer overflows, right, the backlog became too big. If I gave you 4 ideas of things that you could write a blog post about, you'd be like, oh, cool. I've got a nice little backlog of like 4 things I could write about. But if I gave you a backlog of 100 things, you'd be like, ah, I'm never going to catch up. I'll never be able to write those blog posts. So I have in my To-Do app a list called blog post, and there's 18 potential blog posts. Now, these are 18 potential things I could write about. And that's a number that's big in that I'll never run out of stuff to blog about. But it's not overwhelming where it's like, ah, the pressure, the psychic weight of this is too much. So I have less a backlog of existing written posts and more a backlog of ideas that are just so good that they'll just write themselves. Does that make sense? So like it says blog colon and then I've got the little subject I want to write. It's like, oh, I could write that in an hour. So it's just enough information that would allow me to write a blog post very, very quickly. And then I have a queue that is of a good size that is encouraging, but not a crushingly large queue.
Yeah. So I'm doing like literally like the same thing. I'm using Microsoft To-Do. I've got like a to-do list of blog posts, but then you've also got like your podcasts and even tweets. Like one of the things I've got in there is like what I've got named like social media calendar, where like it's, hey, I need to put this out, you know, like the blog post. I need to, one of them is go find something someone else has done on Dev2 or something like that and just, you know, kind of elevate them, tweet them out, try to give them some exposure.
It sounds like you're putting a lot more thought into Twitter than I am.
So are you like with your podcast, are you ever like trying to combine some of that and saying, you know, hey, I want to do a blog post on like your post you did with the Kubernetes cluster. Do you ever think, you know what, that's such a great project, I'm going to do a blog post about that, and I'm going to bring somebody on and do a blog a podcast about that as well.
Right. Yeah. So if there's a thing that has me excited, like for example, a couple weeks ago, I was excited about a thing called Pico 8. It's a game writing system. So it's like, okay, the kids and I are doing Pico 8 on the weekends, playing around. Therefore, I'll do a couple blog posts on Pico 8. Therefore, I'll reach out to the person who invented Pico 8 and have them on my show. And then I found another second person that did stuff on Pico 8. So over the course of nothing other than I was interested in a topic, I got, you know, 2 blog posts, 2 podcasts, and a project with the kids out of it.
This was something I learned early on, Scott, from a friend of both of ours, Chris Sells, when I worked for him. The idea of don't waste content. If you're going to write some content, if you're going to do a podcast or something, figure out a way that you can reuse it at least 2 or 3 times. Maybe a blog post turns into a talk that you give at a conference.
Yeah, the myth that I'm somehow productive is a perception management issue that is only me not wasting content. So I've done whole talks on don't waste your keystrokes. And the idea being that, like, let's say that after this call, one of you lovely people who I do not know emails me a great question. I don't know you, you're lovely people, but I'm not going to give you 5,000 of my keystrokes, right? I'm like, because you're just going to reply and be like, thanks. And I'm like, okay, well, I just gave that person all these keystrokes, and then what was the point? Instead, I will put those keystrokes in a blog post and do a YouTube video and do a Twitch stream on it or whatever, right? You know, do a podcast. So what you've done by emailing me an unsolicited question is, in fact, give me a gift, which is, wow, what a cool question. I never thought about that. Any question from the audience is a gift. And once they've given you that gift, then you can put it in N number of places, where N is some number one plus blog post, podcast, Twitch stream, blah, 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 YouTube, on and on and on and on.
Now, before I
never email them back.
Yes.
Only send them a link to the thing that you did.
Absolutely. And that kind of feeds into a little bit of the next question I have. Kim Philpotts has a question. I'm going to come to that in a second. But I wanted to kind of feed in and conclude your thought there about someone asking a question is a gift. For us as streamers, when we get those questions in chat, that, you know, somebody's asking a question, oh, how do I do this in C sharp? Or, hey, there's a JavaScript library here I'm having a problem with. Mm-hmm. Those absolutely are gifts for us as streamers to be able to generate a clip, to be able to think, here's a topic for my next stream that we can go after, right?
Oh, yeah. Every time that happens, that's an example of what you can do that.
Now, but the flip side of that, and this is the question that I have for you, and I think a couple of folks had similar concepts around this that they wanted to hear your opinion on, is how do you handle the haters who come in with that trolley question, send you a tweet that's mean? What do you do with that?
That's a tough one, because there's a couple of things here. Like, it's easy. I'll tell you what I do, and I'll tell you that it is, you know, that it's true, but it always stings, right? And there are varying levels of privilege that you can come at this with, where I've got, you know, I'm old and I'm doing okay. So there's very little that you can do to hurt my feelings. You know what I mean? Well, if I was, you know, a 24-year-old woman, who didn't speak English well, you know, like add on to all the different things that would make me not privileged, it would become plus one, plus two, plus three, more difficult to just shake it off. Right. But, if the philosophical answer to that question is, why would I let someone who doesn't love me ruin my day? Why would I allow them to do that? There are 8 yeah. billion people in the world, and you do not need to be friends with them all, right?
Absolutely.
So why would I allow them to reach? Why would I allow an internet stranger to reach out from nowhere? It's almost like, you know, you only want people to text you if they know you, but we allow anyone in the world to tweet us. Someone, I tweeted about the Peloton thing recently and the Peloton commercial, a stupid commercial that happened. I had some stupid tweet about it, and it's gone viral, and it's like 5,000 people. And people are telling me that, like, they're just calling me horrible names, and they're saying my family sucks and I must be a weak this and that, and all these dirty words I can't even say. And I'm thinking to myself, y'all are using social media to reach out into the world and crap on me because of a $2,500 stationary bicycle. Like, why do you feel so strong about this? So I just muted the entire thread. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Certainly I didn't block them because blocking is aggressive, but I do mute very consistently.
And that, I think that's something that we as streamers need to be able to handle in our chat rooms, because right, there are times when a stream will turn negative. You'll have trolls that pop mm-hmm. up and try and take over.
Yep. Well, so then that gets back to the original conversation about how positive can you make your room. One of the people that I always loved was NoopCat, right?
Like, yes, she's a member of our team.
She had such positivity in her stream that when the negative people showed up, they would drown out the others.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to stack the deck and let them go after the bad people.
Yep, Suze isn't here today, but she's a member of this Discord as well.
Yeah. So you know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
Her kindness was infectious. Therefore, it would prevent, you know, she had advocates
mm-hmm.
working on her behalf.
Absolutely. So that kind of leads to Kim's question about hosting then, right? Hosting is a little bit more than just managing what's going on in the chat room. Let me unmute Kim so he can ask his question.
So, Scott, you create a lot of really awesome content where you're interviewing people and including people like all your Channel 9 stuff. And bringing others into our communities and channels seems like a very natural way to keep growing and producing content. So my question really is, do you have any tips or resources for improving interviewing techniques? Like, is there a school for that, or is it just practice and experience?
I believe that interviewing techniques are similar to improv. There's a thing called comedy sports with a Z at the end. There's usually one anywhere near you. It's literally learning how to do improv. And one of the biggest things about improv is what's called yes and, where you don't say no to somebody. You instead say yes and. No is a hard stop, and then you have to turn around and redirect. So you've literally slammed someone up against a topic and then rotated them and then shoved them in another direction. That requires energy, and it takes energy out of the conversation. If someone is doing improv and you're trying to make something up and you're like, okay, you know, I've got a ninja sword and you're a Tyrannosaurus. And someone's like, no, I'm not. I'm like, well, wow. Okay. You just like crapped on the whole premise there. Like, what? Okay. If I'm not a Tyrannosaurus, what are you? As opposed to yes. And then redirect. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. Like, you say no to a little kid and it just messes them up. And then you have to go and redirect. Yes. And here we go. As Chef Brent says, build on what they said instead of shutting it down. Even if you mean no, you can say yes and then redirect the conversation and they won't even feel it. Yes and is the Bruce Lee maneuver. Extend what they said. It may not be a perfect 100% yes, but it's not a slap in the face no. That is a thing. Additionally, there's a show called Fresh Air with Terry Gross. That's an American show on National Public Radio. She is well considered one of the top interviewers of all time. And watching, like listening to her, not for the content, but rather for the style at which she moves the conversation forward, is worth it. I would listen to her earlier stuff. Now that she's been doing this for 40 years, she's getting a little bit lazy. But the way that she did it in the mid-90s, the classic Terry Gross interview styles, are a way of listening to an interview as if you are watching a black belt and studying their style. You can get caught up in the content, but you need to basically turn your content brain off and say, oh, look how she did that. Look how she redirected that. Look how she took that potentially awkward moment and turned it around and turned it into something special. Again, this gets back to the original part of the conversation, deliberate practice. Like, people seem to think that you can just turn on the mic and start interviewing people and it's going to go well. You cannot. You have to think about it. And it's like, well, I'm a smart person. Why shouldn't I be able to hold a conversation for 30 minutes and not sound like an idiot? Well, have you practiced it? Like, have you thought about it as a deliberate, focused practice? Have you analyzed, have you listened to yourself and said, oh, shoot, I didn't answer that right. I should have taken the conversation in this way. We wince when we look back in time and we say, oh, God, if I'd only said that, it would have gone in another way. We are conditioned to consciously not criticize ourselves in that way. And I would propose that you take a unflinching eye, turn around, look back, listen to, watch yourself on video and say, wow, I did this wrong. I shouldn't have done it that way. And I will try it differently the next way. People think that just being human and having a conversation is natural. Being charming is in fact a real art. It is a thing that you can practice and become better at, just like dancing. Does that make sense?
Makes total sense. What do you think, Kim?
Does it, though? Does it, Jeff Fritz?
It was great advice. Thanks, Scott.
Oh, thank you for the question. It was a gift. See how I did that?
Yo, yeah.
Call back.
Oh, my gosh. Now, where's Callow? Callow, when you brought up imposter syndrome earlier, that was something new that he hadn't heard before. Callow, I'm going to unmute you so you can follow up on the topic of imposter syndrome with Scott here.
Actually, one other thing I want to remind you of.
Please.
I'm pretty sure this is the thing. Yes. This is pretty good, but there's a YouTube channel called Charisma on Command. Most of these are very kind of bro-ish, where they're like teaching men how to not, you know, how to talk to women or whatever. This is actually a useful, focused analysis of how to behave a certain way.
Mm.
And now don't let the weirdo like icons turn you off. But it's like, why do we find Jimmy Fallon fake? And why do we find Keanu Reeves to be charming? Like, he'll literally look at an interview and he'll say, like, look at the one with Rupert. What's his name there? There's specific techniques in how he moves his body, how he uses his eyes that change how people respond to him. And it is really special and worth watching.
Oh, very cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, sincerely. Okay, people are agreeing, so that makes me feel good.
Yeah, let me unmute Callow so we can follow up on the discussion about imposter syndrome earlier. There you go, Callow, you're open?
Yeah, the terminology imposter syndrome has struck me because I often feel, you know, yeah, you don't know enough to answer this question properly or, mm-hmm. and, you know, but other people seem to know you know enough to answer the question. And that happens throughout life, not just programming and things like that.
Yes.
And without me having to read all the content that you posted, I will.
Yeah, yeah. You get links. Homework.
No. But can you, like, I see you still struggle with it from all mm-hmm. the comments you make, from what we say. At the end of the day, how do you make yourself feel like you know what you know?
So if we go back to the idea of deliberate practice, let's just be real, because we have like a small group here, and I'm even though we're recording, which makes me nervous, I can keep it 100 with just like 50 of my new close friends here. We can understand that most people live their lives accepting the defaults. Most people just double click on the installer, they go next, 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 finish, and that's it. But if you are deliberate about installing some shit, you will hit custom and you will read the EULA and you will think about it. We don't live our lives deliberately every day. You don't wake up on every random Tuesday and like think about, what am I going to do today to make my day better? How can I be my best self? Some people have that energy, some people don't. But what you can do is you can acknowledge and you can say, you know, I sleepwalked through last week, or I got 20 years experience, but for 3 of those years, I was just coasting, being like honest with yourself and then saying, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and this is what I'm going to do to hold it down. I'm going to handle these 3 things tomorrow to make life better. Simply the observation of your own behaviors changes things. You know how they always say, if you observe it, you modify it. Like, you can't look at something without changing it by simply looking. You can't, by simply being mindful, thank you, Raimu, you cannot stop but improving. You cannot stop. If you think about, like, I'm doing Taekwondo right now, and I got to go to Taekwondo in 2 hours, and I got to do some tests for my next belt, and mindfulness, where are my feet right now? How is my body moving? Why does my shoulder hurt? All of those things involve looking in yourself unapologetically. Now, to the point of imposter syndrome, I called Jeff, 3 times this week? Kind of like, I don't really know about this Live Coders thing. What can I say to them? I don't really think I have anything like valuable to say. And he's like, no, it'll be fine. I'll give you a list of stuff to talk about. It'll be all right. In the first 5 minutes, I was like, oh my God, this sucks. And now I think it's actually going pretty well. So I need to own that. I need to own that, right? I need to feel about that. I'm like, okay, all right. I'm still going to freak out for the next one, but I'll just freak out less. Right. I've been speaking. I've been on stage. I've done musical theater. I've done stand-up comedy. I've been presenting professionally for 25 years. I'm still nervous for the first 5 minutes of every single one. And the goal is to get that 5 minutes to 4 minutes and that 4 minutes to 3 minutes. You know what I mean? So, yes, I feel like an imposter. Yes, I feel like I've been coasting on charm for 30 years. Yes, there are 1,000 little things where someone can make me question who I am and if I'm good. But then I can go back and look at what I do and what I have made and say, man, I did that. Like, I'm gonna give myself credit for doing that. I did that. I teach well. I made products. You know, not everybody can Stack Overflow themselves into writing an app. You know, so give yourself credit. Feel bad, observe it, then go back and say, all right, I did do that. I'm gonna give myself credit for that. Does that make sense? You'll never get over it. You'll just get over it faster.
You see, I always thought there was a point where it ends.
But, it doesn't end. I still, like, I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, this morning I looked in the mirror and I was like surprised I'm not 25. And I was just like, oh shit, I'm not 25. But then I was like, okay, well, I guess not. And I think this is things that are good about being old, and these are things that aren't. And I'll probably wake up tomorrow and I'll be surprised again. I'm not 25, but it's that mindfulness that lets me get out of that moment for a second. So like when I give a talk or I give a podcast or I talk to someone, like one of the things that I know about myself, one of my internal biases is I'm intimidated by people with a PhD. So whenever I meet somebody, especially young people, and I'm like, they're like 24 and they got a PhD and whatever. And I went to Portland Community College, right? So like I have like deep, I don't know what I'm talking about, because I'm like, I literally have an associate's degree in community college. And I'm like, oh crap, this person is 22. I have to really explore that. Like, why do I feel like an imposter talking to this child? Like, I have more experience than this person has years. My shoes are older than this doctor, but I'm still intimidated. And the reason is, it's because of the road not taken. This person did something I did not do. And I'm intimidated because they stuck with it. They stuck with college and I didn't. I look at that, I accept it, I acknowledge it, and then I move on. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And thanks for all the other answers to all the other questions. Yeah, every single one of them made a difference. They answered questions I had.
All right. Yeah, thanks. Mindfulness, deliberate practice, intentionality, accepting that it... And don't feel bad. Like, the idea that it won't get better, it's like I have diabetes. I have type 1 diabetes. And it's not cancer, but it ain't awesome. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to die from it. So there are days where it's just like, oh man, right? Like, this is not cool at all. And then I have to be like, all right, this is a bad day. This is a day where I'm having a little pity party. I'm going to feel bad about myself. And then it's like, okay, but here is all the list of good stuff about being me. And I'm still here and it hasn't broke me yet. So tomorrow is another day to turn it all around.
Cool. All right. Thanks. I'll be listening.
Cool.
And enjoy.
Well, you have only 700 episodes of my podcast to catch up on, so get on that.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks, C-Sharp Frith.
So actually, I'm queuing up our mutual friend, Richard Campbell, to join the team here in maybe another week or two, since he's got how many years experience producing podcasts and hosting talk shows? Lily actually has a question here. She's already unmuted. I'll let her ask her question.
Yeah, hi. So my question was more about, you know, following you for the last few years, not literally, figuratively. You're always on the road. You have all kinds of engagements.
No. And I'm
my question is, how do you keep in touch with not only your community, but also the care people in your life? Because, you know, your family, your spouse, your kids, extended family, friends, coworkers, they all have requirements of you. So how do you meet those requirements? How are you able to continually meet those requirements?
When I talk about mindfulness and intentionality, it's something that is not like you wake up in the morning and you look at the post-it note on the mirror and you go, this is a day I'm going to be really thinking about my family. Intentionality, you literally have to reset yourself 5, 6, 7 times a day. Like literally right now, I just realized I was slouching. So now I'm straightening my back and I'm trying to have good posture. Mindfulness and intentionality is literally catching yourself and your bad posture multiple times a day and then straightening it. So it's not twice a year going, I should spend more time with my kids. It's twice a day going, wow, like my 11-year-old just asked to play a game with me. That was a missed opportunity. Can I run in there now? Like, I remember this 15 minutes after he asked me, can I run over there and talk to him today, immediately? Fail fast, fail often, right? You want to catch that as much as you can. So like right now, I'm on vacation. I'm not even supposed to be talking to y'all. Like, I'm not even supposed to come to work today. But my wife's asleep because she's going to work tonight. The kids don't come back from school for 11 minutes. Therefore, I enjoy this. It feeds my spirit. So why don't I hang out with y'all? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So but here's the other thing, and this sounds silly, and it definitely will not like be in the style of my typical podcast, but someone told me that they wanted to do something like learn a language or whatever. And like, I just can't find the time. And I said, do you poop every day? And they were like, yeah, I usually poop. And I was like, you find time for that? Like, you be able to fit that into your busy schedule? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, well, I mean, it must be important, huh? And they're like, yeah. Well, you'll find time for important stuff, won't you? Well, yeah. Well, then is this important or not? And they were like, oh, right? Like, what's important? You have to go and ask yourself, to that original thing at the beginning of this conversation, if it's not underscore making me money, allowing me to close my family, getting connected with my kids, then you drop it out. Right. So what are the things that, like, isn't it amazing how there's people who are complaining how they can't finish that book or write that blog post, but they seem to find time to binge watch on Stranger Things 9? Right. Like, if Stranger Things 9 feeds your spirit, great, do that. But you don't get to watch 9 hours of Netflix and complain you can't find time to blog, or, you know, you can't watch an entire 6 seasons of The Wire and then say, I don't hang out with my kids.
That's fair. Yeah.
That's how I look about it. What do you think?
No, I like that. It's my husband and I were both workaholics. And so we're blessed both now that we can be at home. So we go on walks twice a day to reconnect and kind of
perfect.
Talk about the day.
Love it.
And so we're just, for us, it works. I want to make sure that it's going to continue work. And it's just something that's freaking me out when I see that he's going to change his track a little bit and I'm going to change my track. And so I just kind of wanted to hear it from you. What do you do?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, another great example that I use was that my wife has an MBA and she does all this. She was a finance person. She worked at a nonprofit. And then one day, like on a random Tuesday, she says, I want to be a nurse. So then it's like, okay, fear, uncertainty, doubt. Do you think that's a good idea? Blah, blah, blah. And all of the standard, like, is this, like all of the reasons that I could say no, right? The whole no, no, no. And then it's like, okay, well, yes, and you want to be a nurse. Okay, let's figure out what that's going to look like. So we sat down and we planned it. And it's like, okay, here's what's going to change. Here's how the kids won't, will go to school. And Scott, you're going to have to change your schedule so I can be studying. And I'm going to be working nights now. Da, 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 da. And we put together a plan. So for anything you want to do, you can't just slide blogging and twitching into your day and hope it fits. You have to sit down, look at your current situation, and say, all right, if everything were to change, if I'm going to become a nurse, if I'm going to become a lawyer, if I'm going to quit my job and Twitch full time, what would that look like? And then you plan it, and then you execute on the plan. And then if it didn't work, then you adjust the plan.
Yeah, that sounds great, actually. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for the question.
So in chat, when you were talking about succeeding and failing, there was a comment from Talk to Me Gooseman. That's our friend Eric Gooseman, about how being laid off from his job actually helped change and redirect him in a better direction. Let me unmute him so we can talk about that real quick.
Yeah, it's great hearing you talk about these things, because these are the type of ideas that I kind of internalized but never thought about as a whole. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've always communicated was, so out of college, I got a job just doing Java development, and for the longest, and I worked at that company for almost 3 years, and getting laid off was such a heartbreaking thing at the time. But after, going from there and getting introduced, and then that kind of led going into web development, from doing just Java application, Eclipse plugin development. And when I looked back and kind of reflected on that, I realized that the getting laid off, looking back, was actually a great thing, because I was just cruising. Like I was kind of like in this kind of like dead end job, very underpaid, and in this tiny office. And it made me realize that, I should look back and reflect on what I, not work for just the sake of working and earning a living, but working for my own well-being. And this kind of happened again, like, or re-solidified that belief, was when I had gotten laid off at another company again. And after getting laid off, I realized I was kind of falling into that rut again of kind of cruising. And now, with living two lessons, now I definitely follow that kind of philosophy of if I being happy at what I do and trying to do the best of what I do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like and that's actually what led into me doing Twitch in the first place, is being inspired to create and pursue, because if you just cruise, you do nothing and you just kind of sit there and watch Netflix all day.
So keeping it really 100, when you're in the car and you are driving and you're not touching your phone, of course, like you never touch your phone in the car, right? And then you touch your damn phone and you almost hit somebody and you get that moment where you're fine and everything's great. Oh my God. And then it's like, we've all had that experience in a car, right? where it's like, holy crap, I almost died. I almost killed everyone. I am never touching my phone again. That's where life has like smacked you in the head and you have decided to take it, make a change or not. The fact is, though, you will then fall back into your existing thing and you'll touch your phone again and then it will happen again. The trick is to make the distance between the having life smack you in the face be farther and farther and farther. So it's not hitting you in the face daily. It's hitting you in the face like yearly or whatever. So for you, getting laid off was the reality check, as they say, that smacked you and like, oh crap, I need to like think about like stuff. For me, my wife got cancer, so we had our cancer year. I've had other moments where it's like, oh crap, this is a thing and I need to change. Now that I'm getting older and I'm like creaking physically, physical stuff makes you realize, oh wow, like I'm starting to hurt. I need to start working out more, or I need to eat better, or I got my blood work back from my doctor yesterday and I need to change it. If you don't have mindfulness, those little things where like, the universe is checking in with you and making sure that you're growing get ignored. And I feel like people who aren't growing sometimes get reminded more who aren't. And it's really our job to listen to the universe poking at us and reminding us that we need to listen. Now, I think it's horrible that you were laid off, and I'm not saying that, you know, you decide whether the universe gave it to you because you needed it. But you know how they always say God doesn't do anything to us that we can't handle. You know, it sounded like it was exactly what you needed at the time. If you weren't listening, though, it might have happened again and again.
Yeah, I'm totally happy I got laid off, so I'm happy.
Well, it still kind of sucks, though. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it sucks, but that's where you make life plans, right, and prepare for the unexpected.
Yeah, not everybody is prepared to get laid off financially or emotionally, but it sounds like you were.
Thanks for all the advice.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
All right, Scott, that's been an hour already.
Really?
Can you believe it?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Pika Player just said, ugh, I missed it. It was recorded.
It's recorded.
And certainly the thing that you can do, new friends, is take any and all of the items shared in the links, and you can share them out on Twitter or your various and sundry social things. The number one thing that you can do to me as a gift is if I've provided you some value, then you can share that widely with your friends and coworkers. That helps me.
Share them on the stream. Point back share and say, hey, look what I learned from Scott.
Share all the things.
Well, that was a show. I hope that you enjoyed it. At least you got some value out of it. Maybe one little snippet of wisdom there a little bit. But here's the ending. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.